Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
What would you do if you accidentally discovered the house next door was occupied by something not human? Something horrifying. Something unspeakably evil. No one believes you.
Mom, I didn't have a nightmare.
Not your mom.
They did kill a girl over there.
Not your girlfriend.
Charlie, is this some sort of a trick to get me back?
Not even the police.
Look, I know it's crazy. I know that, but look, Lieutenant!
It knows that you know. You'll do anything to protect yourself. But it will do anything to protect its secret.
What's up, guys? It's Katie Hettenbach, and this is Katie Afraidy, a horror movie review podcast where we chat with comedians, actors, filmmakers about what? Scary movies, obviously. It's a silly, ha-ha, goofy time. We shoot the shit. We get off topic. We spoil. It's very ADHD friendly. But either way, shit's about to get spooky.
Ooh.
It's not working. Oh, no. It's so embarrassing. There we go. Us worked really well the first time. Wow.
Ooh.
Honestly, it's perfect for this movie, so it's like even better. It's like I'm thinking more. Jerry, sorry.
We love the smell of a fog machine in the morning.
We need it. We crave it. I crave it. If I don't have, like, honestly, every time I wake up, I just do a quick little.
Don't talk to me until I've inhaled my fog machine.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I can't. It's like I don't drink coffee.
Oh,
so instead of that, it's a morning fog machine.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah,
everybody's trying to cut back on caffeine and other vices. I think you're really being a trendsetter in this moment.
Yeah, it's expensive, but it's you know what? I gotta do what I gotta do, you know? And you're probably like, hey, who the heck is this person? I can barely see her because of the fog, but who the heck is this person? She's a writer. She has a podcast. She's also part of the Fango fam. It's VJ Colangelo.
Hello, hello, hello. Hi, hi, hi.
Hi. Thanks for coming on, dude.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm so excited, especially because you were like, hey, come on my show. What movie do you want to talk about? And I was like, I want to talk about this movie. And your response was, I've never seen this one.
Okay, to be fair, there are a lot of horror movies out
there. That's very true.
And everyone always assumes, hey, you've covered everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's not possible.
Correct.
Because also, where does horror start? Are we talking like the guillotine snuff films from the 18 or whenever the fuck film was fully invented? Like, are we talking, are those, because sometimes those are considered horror movies. So are we talking those?
We can talk Greg Mignol plays back in France if we really want to go back.
So then I could spend my whole life watching what? 8 movies a day, mm-hmm. and I still would not have watched everything.
And this is also why whenever somebody says, like, they went and saw a movie in the theaters and, like, that's the worst movie I've ever seen, I'm like, you do not watch enough movies. There's so much more horrible shit out there.
You haven't seen anything,
mm-hmm.
but you know what? That's part of the fun. So I think you like horror a little bit.
I like horror just a little bit.
Just a little bit. You're like Fango fam.
Fango fam. Sorry for touching your microphone. There's Fango fam. Tattoos all over my entire body of horror movies. I love it. It's my life.
Yeah. How did the love of horror start for you?
So this is my favorite story to tell people, especially if they've never heard it for the first time. I do not have memories where horror has not been part of my life. The earliest memory I have, I'm sitting on the couch with my mom and she's folding laundry and she's just rented Stephen King's It, the miniseries, mm-hmm. from the video store. And she sits me down and my dad walks in the room and he looks at me and he looks at her and he looks at me again and he looks at the TV and he goes, "Don't you think she's a little too young for this?" And my mom looks at me, looks at the TV, looks at my dad, looks at me again and goes, "Oh, she'll never remember this." That is the earliest memory that I have, is watching Stephen King's It on the couch with my mother. That is where my consciousness begins as a human being.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
She's not going to remember this. She's going to be just fine.
It's like, nope, it's everything. And I was very lucky that at the end of my block growing up, there's a little strip mall and there was a mom and pop video store in it. And they had a back room, like beaded curtain back room. But that's not where they kept adult films. That's where they kept horror movies. And things with really scary box cover art. And so, of course, all I wanted to do was go in there because if you tell me I can't go in the room, I want to go in the room.
I want to be in the room, yeah.
And so I went in there one day and my mom was like, "Pick something. Pick whatever you want." Do I remember what movie that was? Of course not, I don't. But I went home, we watched it, and my mom established this rule. We will watch any movie that you want to watch, but once we push play, you have to finish it. Because she was like, if
fuck yeah.
She was like, if you push pause or if you run away from this, whatever your imagination comes up with is going to be probably 100 times worse than what actually happens in this movie. And she was right.
Yeah.
So they eventually like signed a little waiver at the video store and I could just march back there as like a 7-8 year old and take whatever I wanted. So all of my like, when did you see this? When did you see this? Like probably way too young is the answer to every question.
So on that note, what was the first movie to scare you, horror or not?
Ooh, the first like really, really big one was actually the box cover art of Night of the Living Dead.
Okay.
Specifically the one where it's her face screaming right before she's about to get, you know, garden shoveled.
Mm-hmm.
Something about that image scared me so badly that I didn't want to watch the movie. So I was watching like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, movies that are significantly more violent and terrifying than Night of the Living Dead. But something about that box cover art just haunted me in a
way. Yeah.
And I didn't end up watching it until I was probably like 14, 15 years old. And I was like, oh, what the hell was I so afraid of?
Yeah.
But I had nightmares about just that box cover art. But then meanwhile, like Peter Jackson's Dead Alive, where it's like a face coming out of the mouth, did nothing to me.
Yeah.
Just something about old school black and white woman shrieking was like a step too far.
Yeah. Oh, no. There's always, it's something so simple that just absolutely freaks you out. They're like the Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire for me with the Green Goblin.
Yes.
He creeped me out. But he's actually kind of creepy. So like,
oh, yeah. I have, like, very hyper-specific phobias.
Yeah.
I don't fuck with robot with human teeth. So, like, Terminators were really bad for me as a kid. I love them now, but I do still have a visceral reaction that is completely uncontrollable. Whenever they, like, de-skin and it's just robot with teeth, I feel my heart start to race.
Okay.
The episode of Buffy where John Ritter is a robot and they take his face off. I was like, I hate all of this. Like,
so Scooby-Doo, when they're like, here's Mr. Monavarius.
Yes.
And they're like, he's like, you should go. Like, terrifying.
It scares the hell out of me.
Scrappy. Okay, so, yeah.
Just robots with human teeth. I just can't do
it.
It's so scary. And of course, that means I have to challenge myself. I'm going to seek it out. I'm going to watch every Terminator movie in the theater and have a panic attack and look like an idiot. But that's part of the fun.
Right? Right? You know, I'm going to watch Human Centipede again and be totally fine. Definitely not dry heave again. What do you mean? Those three movies, I was just was like.
I mean, that's a normal reaction. I feel like if you tell somebody, I watched The Human Centipede and got a little sick about it, they're going to go, that makes sense.
Yeah.
If you were like, I watched The Human Centipede and then had a beautiful 5-course meal and all of it was bleeding, people would be like, but why?
911? Hello? Hello? 911? Take this creep out of here. Get this guy on the list. I'm scared of him. Oh, no. Oh, no. Speaking of lists, good segues today. Good on me. Ooh.
I'm proud of you.
It's early in the day. It's going to get really bad to last episode. It's going to get great. I'm going to be like, So movies, right? That's what we're here to talk about. So speaking of being on a list, I gave you a huge list, but you were, and you skimmed it, but you're like, you haven't done Fright Night?
Yes.
What?
I had to.
So you're like, of course we had to do Fright Night. So for somebody who has never seen the movie before, how would you explain this movie to somebody?
All right, so Fright Night, and specifically Fright Night 1985, because Fright Night has been remade, as has most horror movies from the 1980s. But Fright Night is the story of a high school boy named Charlie Brewster, and he is a little awkward. He's kind of your typical boy next door, and he starts to suspect that his new neighbors, Jerry Dandridge and his roommate carpenter Billy Cole, are vampires, and he starts trying to convince everyone in his life, this dude's a vampire. He's definitely killing sex workers. We need to stop this guy. And everyone's like, Charlie, what are you? Vampires aren't real. You sound insane. And so it is a quest for Charlie to be believed and for the vampires to be stopped. It is also so gay and so sexy and so wonderful. It is my literal favorite movie of all time, regardless of genre.
You have, as soon as you said, I was like, yeah, let's do it. You showed me you had a tattoo, all of your signed picture for everything. Yeah.
It's a sickness. I do have a massive fruit bat tattoo, taking a giant bite out of an apple, wearing a red scarf. That is my Jerry Dandridge tattoo. And yes, the office that I conduct all of my work out of, many of the interviews that I do for work. There's an entire just shrine dedicated to Fright Night and different images of Christopher Sarandon as Jerry Dandridge. It is a problem.
I think it does sound like a problem. I think you need more.
Here's the thing. If I could own a home, I would have an entire room just dedicated to Fright Night merch. I have more art. I just ran out of wall space.
That's fair. I don't know where to put it. I feel that. I'm like, I have an entire closet that's just like, when I get more wall space, you guys are fucked.
Yes.
It's just going to be head to toe, like just lined with
Who
posters.
Who needs wallpaper when you can have a discounted frame from, I would say, Joann's, but Joann's doesn't exist anymore. So now we have to go to Michael's.
Yes. Michael's.
Michael's. But I'll get all the posters, and it's beautiful. And the walls are adorned, and it is just a way for everyone to know, one, what I'm into, and two, what great taste I have.
That's so true. So when was the first time you saw Fright Night? You remember this?
Oh, of course I do. Okay. So
you're like, it was my sexual awakening.
Yes, that's part of it. So I saw Fright Night for the first time when I was like 10 or 11 years old. Mm-hmm. And I was with my babysitter who, for the record, was maybe 12 or 13.
Okay. I remember babysitting at that young age. And I was like, you left me in charge of like
a life,
a life,
a human being.
Also, I think I was like maybe 12 and I had like 8 kids I was supposed to be watching.
Yeah, the difference between the two of us is, like, she could go to the graduation dance for the junior high, and I could not. Like, that was the age difference we were talking. She was maybe 2 inches taller than me.
That's crazy.
But she also had parents that were very cool and were down to, like, watch scary movies. Like, at her house, she had, like, a Chucky doll on display. Mm-hmm. So, like, we're dealing with kind of cool people.
Yeah.
But she had also not seen Fright Night, but the cover art of Fright Night is so just iconic of just this horrifying shark-mouthed vampire ghost above a suburban home. It's so striking. And so we watched that movie together, and one, I was immediately in love with it. But the thing that was so jarring is that I could not process what was happening to my body watching Jerry Dandridge in this movie. And I have said this many a time. This is very much on the record. It took me as long as it did to realize I was a lesbian because I couldn't understand, why is this the only man that I have ever been interested in my life? I can't be a lesbian because I want to fuck Jerry Dandridge. And then it wasn't until I was like, I don't know, 17 or 18 that it's like, oh, there's a thing called aesthetic attraction. I appreciate him like I do a work of art.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely a lesbian and I want to be Amanda Beers, who plays Amy, a legendary lesbian.
Yes.
Everything makes sense now, but it took some time.
Yeah.
Jerry Dandridge messed me up for a while.
Well, you know, like, he's the one. It's also, he's a vampire.
Yes.
So it's like the eternal, like, so I guess this, you know, brings me to this important first thing to ask you. Team Edward or Team Jacob?
Edward. Oh, my God. All day, every day. Especially because, one, Have you ever listened to Robert Pattinson's commentary tracks?
He's hilarious.
He's so funny. Yeah. Like, so the commentary tracks, absolutely incredible.
Brilliant.
But also, Edward is also kind of Angel from Buffy. Mm-hmm. And, like, David Boreanaz was also, like, I know that it's super controversial and blasphemous. I've always been on Team Angel over Team Spike. I know, crazy, whatever. Oh. Throw stones at me outside. But Edward is just... Edward is just the next step of that. So, of course, always Edward.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I mean, the real team is I'm team Bella should go to college and date around a little bit and not marry the guy she fell in love with in high school.
Bella, I don't think you're straight.
No. No, no, no.
Bella.
No.
I think she needs to get out, you know, of her shell, meet some people, maybe, you know, maybe she won't become as awkward as she is, you know? She
I mean, if there's anyone in the Cullen family that I think she would have been best for, it would have been Alice.
Yeah.
I think they would have done great together.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Missed opportunities.
Stephanie Meyer, get on it.
This is what happens when Mormons write vampire stories. It's very straight.
It's
aggressively straight.
There wasn't enough soaking for me.
You're right.
That's
not enough dirty sodas.
That's. Then for that, I hate it. I think I hate Twilight now.
I'm sorry I ruined that for you.
Damn. Well, it's good that we have Fright Night. So I have to be so for real. I have seen the remake more than this one. So
is it Colin Farrell? Is it Anton Yelchin?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay, which is a pretty solid remake.
I was very aggressively anti the remake for many years because the original is so sacred to me.
Totally.
Like, the first time I saw what Colin Farrell looked like in this movie, I was like, get off his throne. You don't belong there. What are you doing?
Yeah.
But I've come around to it in recent years and rewatched it. I'm like, no, this is very fun.
Yeah.
I like this movie. It does do everything that I want a Fright Night movie to do. I do think it could be a little fruitier because the original one is extremely fruity.
Yeah, he didn't have... a handler. It was just Jerry, which I liked, but I also like I understand why he had it in the second one or in the second one in the original. Good God. But I don't know. Yeah, it's like the thing of your Fright Night is that's to me that you know, the first one I saw.
Of course. You always remember your first.
I mean, when Jerry bites Amy in the club scene and says, "That a girl?" ripe 2011, okay?
See, meanwhile, I get, like, off-the-shoulder sweater and, like, the gayest club music you've ever heard in your life. And it's like, why do I want to be her?
Right?
Why do I want short, curly hair and, like, a popped collar so everyone knows that's what sexy is?
Yeah, but also... Again, we jump around. That's what we do. I like when Amy becomes a vampire, her hair gets all of a sudden longer, but then when she goes back to not being a vampire, it immediately gets short again.
Oh, yeah. We're playing femme dress up here. Like, and Amy in the original movie is so regressively infantilized.
Yeah.
She has a little bow in her hair with yarn. She's wearing overalls every day. Mm-hmm. Like, she is so cute and adorable. And so when she becomes a vampire, it's like, yeah, we have to make you so sexy, make you look so different. You're getting a wig. You're getting a deep V dress. It's going to be white. We're going to make sure everyone knows your boobs are up.
Like, you have boobs.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I just was like, where did your hair go? Wait, what? I think the first time watching it, because I watched it twice, I didn't see that. And I was like, oh, yeah, she's always had short hair. Then I was like, wait a second. Have long. Where did it go? It's like those Barbies that would get longer hair.
You could get longer hair.
Yeah.
Cut them.
I was
wait,
a Barbie?
Well, that's a thing. Like, this movie is playing with so many different vampire mythos, and a lot of it's like classic vampire mythos. So you can kind of get away with it if you throw something in there about hair. No one's really going to question it.
Oh, yeah.
Because all the other science made sense to everybody, all the fake made up vampire science.
Yeah. I mean, it's totally. I mean, vampires are. Okay. Do you believe in vampires? You think they're real?
I don't know if vampires are real. I believe that, like, goths who spend a little bit too much time on the internet and drink each other's blood are real.
That's
like, that's real.
Have you been to New Orleans? They're crazy. They're freaking crazy. I think the most realistic part of this movie is in the beginning when Charlie and Amy are making out and they're watching a horror movie and she goes, wait, it's your favorite thing.
You love him, Charlie.
Stop mid-makeout to watch the, I've done that. I've been like,
oh,
no.
Of course.
I was like, we can't make out. We have to finish the movie first.
This is why no one can ever invite me over for Netflix and chill, because it's like, no, I care immensely about the Netflix part of this arrangement.
Yeah, it has to be, and I'm like, even if I've seen it before, shh, you can wait. He's on screen. Shush. This is more important.
I love, too, that we get this, like, scanning shot of the entire bedroom. And we see that they are not on the bed. They're on the ground.
Floor. Yeah, there's a couple of blankets. I was like, is that more comfy for you?
Okay. I guess maybe it's to, like, hide in case Charlie's, like, very excited mother comes in. Maybe.
She's crazy.
I love her. I love her so much. I love that she gasps when it's not needed. I love how supportive she is. She's definitely a single mom who works too hard. Like, I love her so much.
I wrote, mom is annoying as hell. Because she's just...
See, her being annoying is why she's great. She's offering him drugs. Like, do you need a Valium?
What?
Where can I get that, mom?
That's actually probably a good mom. You know what? I take that back. You know what?
She's like, Valium and hot cocoa? What more do you want out of your mother?
The mother's love? No! Valium and hot cocoa. That's the key to sleep. Duh. Fuck. I mean, 80s were wild, man. 80s were wild.
80s were wild.
80s were wild.
At least she wasn't offering Quaaludes. Like, then it would be like, all right, we've taken it a step too far here.
It's also the way that, like, she's just so clueless. And she's like, I invited our neighbor in. I'm sorry. I don't know about you. Okay. Never in my life. Okay, I'm maybe close with one of my neighbors in my actual neighborhood, like where my parents live. Now I like see my neighbors. I'm not being like, hey, come on in, let's hang out. Like, no, get the, especially a man, Now so, I know it's the 80s, it's different, but no.
See, I'm like, I had the total opposite experience, but I'm very, very lucky because my parents, like all of their friends, they all bought houses within like a 2-block radius of each other. So all of the kids were all around the same age. So we all had like instant best friends growing up. But my parents like had like an open door policy. My parents are incredibly social people. Now they're retired and they moved to a different state. And yet every time I go down there, I'm like, you're like the mayor of this city and you're like barely living here. But people were always at my house, so it would not have fazed me at all. But it's very clear, Charlie's mom is not a social butterfly. She's not used to this. So the fact that this sexy man is sitting in the living room and the camera makes sure we know he's sexy because we're going to follow from feet to fingernail. Uh-huh. We're going to make sure you get a good look at him. Uh-huh. She's also very excited that he's there. I mean, she is worried. She's like, my luck, he's going to be gay because this movie canonically acknowledges gayness, which is something a lot of 80s movies were not doing because of, you know, the AIDS crisis happening. Yeah. So kudos to Tom Holland for saying, no, we're naming it. King. And she's so excited he's there. And it's like, you know what? I don't know how long she's been without Charlie's father. I don't know if they're divorced. I don't know if he's dead. I don't know her story.
Yeah.
But if that guy moved next door to me, yeah, I would also invite him over.
Yeah,
I would. I know this about myself.
It's also interesting comparing her to Toni Collette in, you know, because again, that's the first one I watched. So of course I'm comparing the two and I'm like, oh, how are these similar?
Mm-hmm.
She's so much more chill and laid back, but she never invites him in.
Yeah.
Which I did kind of like better in the remake because I was like, it gave more of like, okay, now we have to destroy the house. There's no house. Now I'm going to bring you outside.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like the chase aspect, which I liked. But
see, I do like this as a decision, but the original works so well for me because once she's let him in, he even announces to Charlie's face, he's just playing with his food at this point. He's so cocksure. And it just, that's really what I'm attracted to more than anything.
Oh, yeah.
Is a character that confident that he's like, I'm going to mess with you in front of your mother and there's nothing you can do about it. But because that happens, he's like, I'm just going to show up into your bedroom and we're going to have really homoerotic subtext conversations. And I'm all about it.
It's great. And also when he moves in, the fact that like mid makeout, he's like, I'm going to have sex with Amy now. Let's do it. And she's like, no. And then she's like, wait, yes. To the bed. And then he's like, wait, something's happening out my window. There's just a giant coffin being brought into my neighbor's house. All of a sudden, he just has binoculars on hand by the window.
What have you been doing, Charlie Brewster?
He's a fucking creep. He's a fucking creep. But for me, I think what was crazy is that how fast Charlie switched up. Like, him in, like, the first, what, 2 minutes of the film, mm-hmm. is completely different from the entire rest of the movie. He's like a confident kind of piece of shit who's kind of trying to force his girlfriend mm-hmm. to have sex a little bit. And then all of a sudden he's like, ah, vampire! And I was like, what was that?
It's almost
choice?
Like he had a gay awakening and now his life is different now, because nothing is straighter than your girlfriend going, Charlie, I'm ready. And you're like, not now, babe.
There's a coffin outside.
There are men outside that I need to observe.
Gay. And it's fine. It hit him. And the gay hit him right on the head.
Yeah, it did. There was like a giant mallet that just went boink and everything was changed.
And then he went boink and he was like, what? It's like, Amy, go away. I need my time.
And then Jerry's going to show up in his room and he's going to be like, this is a secret. You have a choice. I don't have a choice. And then I'm going to physically throw you into a closet.
But also he held him at the throat and he was like, wait.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, he's like, wait, hold on a second. Can you keep doing that?
Yeah. He's like, I'm not going to fight this.
I'm not going to fight. I'm actually really enjoying this. Could you?
Oh, no. It's so terrible. Oh, Chris
Sarandon.
Oh, no,
Jerry.
Oh, no.
Stop. Don't.
Oh, no. This picture of my girlfriend's going to go out the window and get impaled on a fence.
Oh, no. Your shirt came off. Shoot. Oh, your pants, too. Darn it. Whoa! How did that happen? Not again.
Not again.
Not again.
A terrible existence.
Oh my God. So great. So it's so, like, those moments are so fun. And just like those little things. Anyways.
I love it. There's so much.
It's a great freaking movie. And with Ed also.
So a thing that people might not know, if they don't know backstory about Fright Night, is that Fright Night is not just coded as a very fruity movie. Mm-hmm. It is also canonically a very fruity movie mm-hmm. because Amanda Beers, as I said, legendary lesbian, going to go on to do like so much like groundbreaking work in like the world of like gay sketch comedy. Like she's mm-hmm. the best.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. Like Big Gay Sketch Show. Like she's a big part of that. Like,
wow. Okay.
She's Unmarried with Children. Like she's great. Stephen Jeffries very famously did a lot of gay porn after he stepped away from the world of acting.
Love.
And Roddy McDowall, who is our Peter Vincent in this, he was never out openly when he was still alive, but it was kind of a secret, like a open secret. Everybody kind of knew this. And then many film historians have talked about it in his passing. So because you have these three actors, three of like the four like main group of non-vampires, mm-hmm. which vampires, there's no such thing as a heterosexual vampire. Let's just get that out of the way. So you can take them out of the equation completely. Yeah. And just look at this four. Three of those four actors are gay. And so there's like little queer reads to everything they do in this movie that when you watch it with that information in hindsight, it's so unavoidable. I mm-hmm. mean, you have Evil Ed, who is so clearly like in love with his best friend. And, you know, he's doesn't have a lot of friends at school. He's very isolated. And the thing that he's seduced by when it comes to Jerry is not even like scared or even sexuality. It's empathy from what is ostensibly like a queer elder of like, I know what it feels like to be forgotten and left out, and like, come with me. I will make you not feel pain. You will feel welcome. You will have people. Like, he's offering him community. And it's so heartbreaking and beautiful when you watch it, because you're like, wow, there's so many layers to this.
Yeah. And his name is Evil.
And his name is Evil Ed.
He said, when you have a nickname.
Mm-hmm.
You can also decide, hey, I don't want to be called that. Evil?
I mean, he fights it. He's like, stop calling me evil, but he also kind of accepts it.
Yeah.
I mean, my name is BJ. Everybody has told me every joke that you could possibly make about that, and they always think they're the first person to ever make that joke. They're always wrong. And it's just a thing
Wait,
I deal
what
with.
What do you mean?
Who can imagine?
Which joke?
My beautiful Christian name? I know.
What is it?
What does it stand for?
Yeah.
Brittany Jade.
Everybody always says, like, I would not have guessed that.
Everyone always says, like, oh, is it, like, well, like, Bobby Joe or something, which makes more sense.
Billie Jean?
Billie Jean, also a good one. But when I say Brittany Jade, the response usually is, yeah, you're not a Brittany, you're a BJ. And I know that to be true.
I could do Brit.
And, like,
Brit.
I get it. I'm definitely not a Britney, but yeah. I know what that means for me. I don't know what that means for other people when they say that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But no, yeah, you're definitely not a Britney. Like, my legal name isn't my, or my legal name isn't my name.
Mm-hmm.
No, my name isn't my name. It's shortened version of my legal name, which is Caitlin, but no one calls me that.
Like, no, I could never.
Yeah, right?
You're Katie.
It feels like a mean
You have
girl.
Katie vibes.
It gives me like a mean, like my parents even knew that before I was born. They're like, we're going to call her Katie. And I'm like, then why didn't you name me that?
Right.
Why did you like Caitlin? And I'm like, that's, who is that? Sometimes I forget how to spell it.
One of the worst is whenever somebody, like I'm in somewhere important, like the DMV, and they obviously call me by my actual name and no one ever calls me that, so I
you
never
forget.
React.
And then you're like, oh, that's me. I forgot.
Yeah. They're
like, Caitlin, I'm like,
who is she?
Yes, that is I. That's me. And then I'm like, do I want to correct them? Because I usually, I mean, on the podcast, I've actually been pretty good at not stuttering on my name, but in like normal conversation, absolute chit show. And I'm like, do I want to correct them? I'm like, or am I Caitlin?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, shit.
See, that's how I know whether or not I need to answer the phone call that's coming to me. If they're like, we're looking for Miss Brittany, I'm like, I don't know who that is. Goodbye. Wrong number.
Oh,
it's probably the IRS. I should probably answer these.
She's dead. What? No. Oh, no. And then they call you again. You're like, hi, this is BJ. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And they're like, who's that? Who? What do you mean? What do you
mean? Sometimes I get Mr. because most people can't wrap their heads around a woman going by BJ. So then I'll get like Mr. Colangelo and I'm like, that's my father. No, thank you. No.
He's not here right now, but have a good day.
He is shirtless somewhere in Florida. I can't help you right now.
As he should be.
He really is. We used to call him the sleeveless dream because like he does not own shirts with sleeves unless they're for weddings and funerals. But now he's in Florida, so he's just shirtless all the time.
That's a very Florida man thing to do.
Yeah, and he's not from, we're from the Midwest. I'm like, you're from the state line of Illinois. Wait, and Wisconsin.
Where are we? Have we talked about this?
Yeah, we talked about this at a pool party.
Oh my God. Okay. No, I want to delve more. Yes. Oh my God, we did. Yes. My brain is bad. Thank you. Terrible brain right now.
It happens. We all have those days.
Now it's coming back. Yes, James's pool party. Yep, there it is. Okay, got it. I was like, when were we at a pool together? We didn't, nobody went into the pool. That's the thing.
No, some of us went into a hot tub. Nobody went into the pool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a pool party.
No.
Just a party where we're in swimsuits, but standing near a pool.
Yes.
It's just a swimsuit party.
Yes.
So sad. Why do we do that?
I don't know.
What's wrong with us? What the hell is wrong with us? So is there like a moment in Fright Night? And like this, I mean, you obviously rewatched it. You know.
The limit does not exist of how many times I've seen this movie.
Is there something this round that you noticed that you didn't notice other times? I mean, you've seen it so many times where it's like you probably haven't, but it's like, oh, there was this weird guy in the background that was doing this, because that's all of a sudden that's where I start looking.
One of the things that I love, and it's something I've always loved, but I think this time around it's the precision is more prominent to me. When Charlie calls the police to be like, there are vampires next door,
mm-hmm.
and the detective shows up and they're doing their investigation, and finally Charlie snaps and is like, there's a coffin in the basement, you gotta check it out. And you can tell immediately Billy Cole is like, got you, sucker. Like, now everyone's gonna think you're crazy. You sound so stupid right now. But he's playing along with the joke with the detective, and he makes a whistle sound and makes like a cross with his fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And the edit on that is so clean. And like the comedy that exists because of that edit is perfection. I've always loved that bit. But this time around, I was like, man, yeah, you do that like a half second too late or too soon. And that joke doesn't work. But it is perfect.
It
doesn't.
It would not land.
Mm-hmm.
It would definitely not land.
It needs to be so snappy that like you almost don't catch it. It's perfect.
I don't want to keep comparing it to the 2011, but like, again, that is my, you know, my point of reference. But comparing the Charlies, it just was so like, Amy's too.
The Amys are entirely
totally
different.
You have a confident Amy who's almost like the Charlie in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, Charlie, I know you're the virgin.
Mm-hmm. I like, I think that the reason Fright Night 2011 does work for so many people is that it really is a reflection of that time period. Yeah. It is looking at the way that teenagers have changed, because teenagers in the 80s, especially when we look at cinema compared to teenagers in the 2011s and now into like the 2020s, it is different. Like, yeah, we behave differently because of our lived experiences, the way that we interact with each other with social media. Like, it's just different. And I have this like weird affinity for the ones from the 80s, because we just don't really, we don't just not have characters like this anymore. We don't have people like this anymore. Mm-hmm. Because everybody is sort of getting hyper matured, because you have such unlimited access and unfiltered access to what everyone else in the world is doing at any given time. You have so many more instances of modeling of behavior that you can pick up on. Whereas like the kids in the 80s, when you're watching like Charlie, he's so pathetic in this, mm-hmm, movie. He's so pathetic. And Amy is so sweet, because it's so clear she has never seen a confident woman her age who is sure of herself, is sexually confident. Mm-hmm. That's like not a world she's aware even exists, and she's a reflection of that.
Yeah.
And so I really admire that, because it's also just not my experience.
Totally.
I was fast, as the kids like to say. So I was never like sweet, innocent Amy. Like, I would have loved to be, I don't know, like a senior in high school and been like, all right, come here. Let's have a conversation about what you should be tolerating with your shit ass boyfriend. Because yeah, this is not it.
Yeah.
Also, you're a lesbian. Let's figure that out, too.
You are gay. Which is a great scene in another movie. But, no, yeah. That's, yeah. She's, it's a totally different vibe, and just, like, just the confidence level, and also bringing in more of, like, their friend group and whatnot. And I would have liked more of that in the original,
mm-hmm,
you know? But I am also like, that's why it's, you know, you change things. And
oh, yeah.
I want to, like, Ed is just so, even in the,
oh, yeah, he's obnoxious.
And he just, his face, like, the whole time he speaks, it looks like he's about to start laughing,
mm-hmm,
the entire time. He also kind of resembles my ex.
Oh.
And,
well, that's going to get go-home heat no matter what.
Yeah. But it's just, he looks like he's like the whole, and it's just like, again, great acting choice.
Okay? Oh, it's and perfect.
It's great. Because I don't think you're supposed to be like, I love everything about Evil Ed. He's great. But then you do also feel this like sympathy for him when,
totally,
you know, those moments happen, which is
especially
amazing.
Because you're, when you get those moments of like vulnerability, it puts all of his behavior into laser precision focus, where you're like, oh, you're doing bits. You're, mm-hmm, putting on this like air because you are so scared as a human being, and you are trying to like put on this air of like confidence, or like, oh, I'm gonna be annoying so then people can't get close enough to me to hurt me. And then you see the true part of him, the actual vulnerability, or even after he's been turned into a vampire, and granted, they're all wearing very hard plastic contact lenses, mm-hmm, that are just wrecking their eyeballs, because we didn't have sclera lenses back in 1985.
Nope.
You put hard plastic in there and you cry for all of your scenes.
Damn straight. And you could tell.
You, wow, could tell. But it, like, that added level to it, it's just like, oh, you are in so much agony.
Yeah.
Life for you sucks real bad.
Yeah.
And the movie allows us to see that. And yeah, I think it's like a really beautiful choice. And Amy and Ed, like, clearly love Charlie, mm-hmm, like love him so much that they're like, okay,
but
so
they love Jerry more.
Who wouldn't? That's the problem.
Okay, real talk though. Did, because it, like, I listened to a couple things about this, and they're like, yeah, Amy did lose her virginity to Jerry.
Totally.
And I was like, I kept watching that scene, I'm like,
I mean, it's like,
I'm pretty,
fade,
like,
to black. We don't get to see what happens, but it is definitely symbolizing.
Thought, got it. So I thought when she goes, I was like, was that it?
Well, I mean,
and
like,
then
it's,
I was like,
a bite.
I was like, his, no, before that. And I was like, he didn't put it in.
Oh, no, he
didn't. And I was like, his, it was like, in the way it was the room, mm-hmm, when he's having sex with her belly button, I was like, That doesn't make sense. How is she sitting? How is he sitting? I'm like,
how long is that thing?
This doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, I don't know. It doesn't matter. It, you know, it's a movie. It's not real. I know that. But just for a moment, I was like, wait, I don't understand how that worked.
I also love, and this is like non-canonical, this is fully a read from having watched this movie like probably 50 times.
Yeah.
Is that when Amy is with Charlie, she is definitely, or when Amy's with Jerry, she is far more submissive to him. Mm-hmm. She kind of gives herself over to him, which I feel like that's anybody's experience with Jerry Dandridge. But then when she's with Charlie, she is really dommy and is like very much in charge and is like, no, 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 I make the rules now. And I like that for her. I like representation of people learning their switches. Good for her.
She's a switch. She's a switch.
We love that for her. Yes.
We love that for her. He was also, Jerry was way more gentle.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, Charlie, well, you know what? That comes with experience and age.
This is what happens when you've been a vampire for centuries. You have a lot of experience.
But also, I feel, okay. I don't have to get too into this, but like, this Jerry can manipulate people with his eyes?
Yes. So okay. this is why I love Tom Holland so much, because he is such a just student of like all horror,
yes.
like all horror literature, because we get not just vampire transformations with bats, we also get wolves. People forget that vampires in many contexts also turn into wolves. When Count Dracula says, "Listen to them, children of the night, what sweet music they make," he's talking about wolves. And people forget that. So it's like, this is a very cool thing. You have have a reflection in the mirror.
That was crazy.
You have to be invited in. You have the ability to glamour or control with your mind. Mm-hmm. Like, these are all things that are very old school interpretations of vampirism all coming together.
Yeah.
And then you get the added, you know, oh, well, I can stop you with the cross. And it's like, you have to believe in that for that to work. And it's like, ooh, I like this wrinkle. This is nice.
Yeah. Again. In 2011, that Jerry didn't have all that. So that's why I was like, why is he looking at people like that? I was like, what's going on? But then it made me be like, did she actually want to have sex with him?
Mm-hmm. That's the question that you have to have.
You know?
And that's what makes vampire stories always interesting, because there is always this thing of like, are you under their control, or is this something that you actually want and desire? That's the danger of the sensuality. And looking at just the landscape of vampires in the 80s versus the 2010s is very important, because when the 2011 Fright Night remake comes out, we are in a post-Twilight world. We are in a world where we're starting to make a lot more vampire movies again, if only to combat everybody being like, vampires don't sparkle, what the hell?
Yeah.
In the 80s, like, vampires were on a downswing. They even make a joke in this movie where they're like, all people want to watch now are like mass slashers hacking up teenagers, because slashers were really big. So the just general knowledge of like the rules of vampirism were not super clear in the 80s. So the fact that Tom Holland was like, here's a Rosetta Stone that you can use, I think is brilliant.
Yeah. It's so good. It's so good. My God, my brain. And there's also, for those of you who can't hear, you can't because of the fucking mics. There are so many trucks happening. And my ADHD is going rampant. I'm like, how long have you been backing up, sir? So freaking long. Jerry's hot.
He's so
hot.
That's
all I gotta say.
It's crazy. It's ridiculous. And when he is standing on top of the staircase, I also love that the outside of his house, it's like, ooh, a suburban house. And then you walk in and it's like stained glass window.
Yeah.
Now we're in a castle.
But also it's like, so speaking of fog machines. Okay. Jerry.
Yes.
You live where? Do you know?
It's like suburban Southern California.
Okay. Is it near a swamp? Or, like, why the fuck is it just around his house? Or does he have fog machines? And how many does he have? And how much fog juice is, what's his handler's name?
Oh, Billy.
Billy. Billy has to restock those, because you have to have them running constantly. How are other people not? He's why the ozone layer is going to shit.
Listen, it was the 80s. Aquanet was already putting in some work.
It was bad.
No one was questioning
this. But just his house specifically. Mm-hmm. And then how did he keep it? He had to keep them running constantly.
There's
got
to be multiple generators happening right now to get these going.
He's what? A house down, right next door to. Mm-hmm. But yet, Charlie's house, No fog.
Nope.
Just the house.
The fog took one look at his car with the horrible paint job, which did belong to Tom Holland. That just was his ugly ass car, bloody. Which I think is great. The fog took one look and went, that guy's not cool enough. He doesn't get fog.
This guy,
he gets all the fog.
He rolled up in a fucking coffin.
He has so much riz, he gets all of the fog in a tri-county area.
Just in one concentrated. Great. But it's also more of like a haunted house feel versus, again, in the new one with the, it's like a Vegas, like, it's not so much about the house, it's more about like the characters.
The house, you could say, was like a character in the movie.
Shut up.
But it kind of was.
I mean, it is. And like, you get this like amazing shot where Jerry and Billy are like taunting, and you know, Jerry like puts his hands over Billy, and it just is the shot of Billy and Stu from Scream. It's like, I know exactly where you got that from, Scream. You're paying homage to the blueprint for these characters.
So Billy and Stu.
Yes.
Gay. I still like Stu, but it's fine.
I do love Stu.
I used to be Billy, and then I was like, as an adult, I'm like, no.
It's Stu.
He's funny.
He's hilarious.
He's tall.
He's a little woozy.
He's gaggly.
We love him. He's Matthew Lillard. Right. How can you not?
What a babe. What if he was in a vampire?
I would be down for that.
It'll be fun.
Someone needs to call up Mr. Hollywood and put Matthew Lillard in a vampire movie, like, now.
Right freaking now. Started a day ago. Now. Yes.
In production.
When you were talking about them being wolves and, like, I didn't know that lore. I literally wrote, and I quote, are vampires also wolves now? What, now he's a bat rat? What the fuck?
So the bat rat, so all of like the creatures in this are disgusting looking.
Yes.
And that's something that I also appreciate, because I do love a sexy vampire, don't get me wrong.
Totally.
But I also love a reminder, like, they are dangerous. They're going to eat you. They're scary. The shark mouth is so gross and amazing. Mm-hmm. So the bat rat, if my lore is correct, the special effects team on this movie is almost the exact same special effects team from Ghostbusters. Okay. Columbia Pictures was just like, y'all knocked it out of the park on that movie. Let's go to this one. And the bat rat was originally supposed to be in like the library ghost scene of Ghostbusters. Mm. But then it was deemed too scary. And they're like, well, how about this movie? And this can be the vampire bat. And so that's why it looks like so messed up and scary. Which I love. And then the wolf transformation, like, they built like a puppet for it, but then they also just put Stephen Jeffries in 18 hours worth of makeup. Like, it's practical. It's so effective. It's so wonderful. And I love that it's one of the rare instances of a reverse transformation, because we see him as the wolf and then Peter Vincent has to kill him. And it is heartbreaking, because then he de-transforms and you're reminded, oh, you just killed like a 15-year-old boy. Like... You killed a child.
Murderer.
Yeah, like, that's traumatizing. And also there's like a little gay stuff going on there too, because it's just like, this elder gay man just killed this gay child. Ah!
Gay on gay crime.
Gay crime.
No.
But it's also like, in order for me to rescue you from this and save you from this, I have to cause you harm. Like, that's so awful.
Yeah, leave him alone.
I've thought about this movie way too much, but if also, you could
Ed,
not tell.
He, you, what? No.
What? Shocking. Who would have thought?
That's shocking.
No one would have thought that.
That's surprising. But it's in the end, you hear Ed's laugh. And there's a sequel.
Okay, and believe me when I say this. So the sequel has been very out of print for a very long time. It is on the way of, like, getting restored. We're going to get to watch it again, which is very exciting. That movie is even gayer, because we also have, like, gender nonconforming vampires, like, that are very much inspired by, like, New York ballroom scene vampires.
Amazing.
And you get a female lead in place of Jerry, and she is so hot.
Which is what, and then Fright Night 2 in 2013, it was a straight to video that apparently bombed.
It did bomb.
So why did they try to remake the sequel as well?
Why does anyone remake anything? They think they're going to make money.
Well, at least the 2011 Fright Night was, like, actually, like, I, you know, you obviously have, you know, you didn't like it originally, but
it's
pretty, like, it's, for sequel's sake, it's, or not sequel, for, like, a remake, it's pretty close.
It's one of those remakes where I think the biggest crime is that the original one exists. I feel very similarly about a movie like Let Me In, where it's like, that's a really good movie. It sucks that Let the Right One In already exists, because that's always going to be better. Yeah. But, like, it's still a good movie.
Yeah. It just, you know, you have practical effects versus CGI, and it's just, you know, very different. You have
vibes are different.
You don't have the rat bat.
No.
And which... I was like, what the fuck is it? And the second time around, I was like, oh, it is a bat.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just horrifying to look at.
And then I got your tattoo. Mm-hmm. I got it.
Well, because that's why he's eating apples the entire movie, is because he's part fruit bat.
So dumb. So
I've
good.
Thought so it's much so, about it.
Like, I don't want to say it's dumb, like, and like, not dumb, like stupid, but like dumb as in like, that's so smart, but it's so simple. And so,
exactly.
Like,
sometimes the most obvious choice is the right choice.
Yes.
And that's what a lot of this movie is.
Apples. I like when he's eating the apple and he sees Charlie in the bushes.
He's obsessed.
And then his mom is like, Charlie! 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 He's off, literally, you can see him. Are you blind? He's right there.
And then he's going to just throw it.
He says.
He's like, I see you.
Also, why do you throw it like that?
Good question.
Maybe
to land the fact that, like, it is pretty much an entire, like, cored apple, because he just chomped through that thing.
Yeah, he took, but it looked like he took a small bite, and I was like.
And then it's like, no, that's a huge bite. Reminder, I have teeth.
What that mouth do, though? Hey-o. Rip your throat out. Promise?
Please. Please.
So, Jerry, you're seeing him on the dance floor, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're like,
mm-hmm.
Are you like, I'm gonna try to get away. Are you like,
oh, I'm in it.
You said, I'm gonna cast I'm you in. It.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The second that if he made eye contact me at the dance floor, it's like,
I'm
all the feminism has left my body. Like, let's go.
He's gonna be trying to get away from me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna be running at him.
Yes, exactly.
He's gonna be like, whoa, hey, I don't even want you. I'm like, no, get over here. Love me.
And I love too that, like, this is when Amy even sees that he doesn't have the reflection, because they're doing like the little spinny things around. And she's just like, huh. But he looks right at her and she's like, fuck it. And it's like, girl, relatable. I get it.
Same. It's. It's also great when Charlie's like, hey, get off her.
He's and then he, not he, tough at all.
He's like, I'm going to kiss her. And then he tries to punch her. And he's like, ugh.
He's so pathetic. Like, he's punch. Trying so hard. But the second he opens his mouth, it's like,
buddy, you gotta
go take a walk.
You gotta, hey, come back in 20 minutes. Let's try that again. You know?
You need to go workshop some things, because this is not working for you.
Yeah. The nightclub scene in 2011 is like one of my favorite scenes.
Mm-hmm. It is a good scene.
It but just to see them played side by side, they're so different. Like, Jerry keeps a much, like, I mean, it's also Vegas and it's darker, so you can get away with a lot more things.
Right.
Versus this nightclub that's really brightly, or whatever, dance floor that is brightly lit. And Jerry's like, nah, I'm just going to kill some guy real quick and go full vamp. And everyone in the entire place just happens to be like, vampire.
Oh, yeah.
What? He has red eyes.
Because his eyes change when he's, like, dealing with somebody who's clearly, like, double his size.
Yeah.
And it's like, that shouldn't work. What's happening here?
Yeah. And there are times when I'm like, you know you can fly, right? When Jerry's like, I'm just going to walk. I'm just going to. And I'm like, oh, so now you're selective about when you use things. I do when Ed is, when he gets changed, not even the chase, but it's like the walk of him freaking out and Jerry like, no.
Yep.
I know. I'm not going to run. I'm not exerting energy. I'm like.
He's like, I don't need to. He's like, I know exactly how this is going to end.
Like, lions don't hunt like that. But vampires are like, you can run all you want. Mm-hmm. I will find you. And
I will catch you.
I'll kill you whenever I want to
kill
you.
I mean, it's almost slashery in that way, because so many of the slashers are slow moving. And they're just like, run all you want. I'm going to find you. You're going to turn a corner. I will be there. And now I'm going to turn you into a vampire.
I will find you.
But I'm going to give you a really lovely speech first. That's, like, very heartbreaking.
And we're going to hold hands.
We're going to hold hands. I'm going to put you under my coat. I'm going to literally put you under my wing.
I'm going to put you under my wing.
We're going to take care of you.
My little bat wing. Mm-hmm. My little bat rat wing.
A little baby bat.
Baby bat. And I'm going to bite you. And then you're going to look really silly.
Because you're also going to scream. And your friends are not going to come to you. Because you've been crying wolf.
All the time. And Ed, this is, you know what? this is why the jokester, it's hard being the jokester, man.
Mm-hmm. Because when you actually need help, nobody wants to listen to you. It's a problem.
It's hard being me.
I'm so sorry. I will always take you seriously.
Thank you.
Probably too seriously. And you'll be like, whoa, it's just a bit. And I'll be like, I'm sorry. I just needed to make sure.
And you know what? I thank you for that. Because I think everyone's just like, oh, it's not a bit. Oh, okay. You're actually. Oh, no.
Oh. Meanwhile, I have already called like three different therapists to be like, what resources can I get you in this moment right now?
You're so supportive. Thank you. Welcome. And I will be like, oh, no, she's serious. Got it. Okay,
mm-hmm,
cool.
Mm-hmm. And then you'll have to be like, no, it was a bit. And then I can go click and hang up.
Click. Mm-hmm. Never mind.
Never mind. We're fine. JK.
JK. 911. Just kidding. Just joking. Let me see if I have any final questions. I think we are slowly getting towards the end of our time. Oh, Peter Vincent's hair. I want to talk about that.
Oh, the gray spray?
Yes! What in the Lego hair just placed on his head, gray spray? I was like, you are not.
No, they're trying to make him look like older and more distinguished. I mean, this part was originally written for Vincent Price. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Vincent Price was ailing in these years, so they couldn't. And so then when Roddy McDowall got involved, he wanted to change the character a little bit. He's like, I don't want him to be quite so refined. I want him to be, you know, kind of on the way out, which he was right. Like, horror hosts were on their way out during mm-hmm. this time period, and they wouldn't see a resurgence until, like, you know, you really had, like, Svengoolie, Elvira, and, like, a couple other, like, really big ones. But otherwise, like, that idea was just, it's very localized, it's very public access. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, he's not really making a living doing this anymore. And so the gray spray I love because it's never fully established, like, is this just what he does when he's in character, or is he just living this gimmick all the time because otherwise people will not recognize who he is without it. And so, like, you have to live this character. It's like when drag queens, like, before they get really famous, they're always in drag because otherwise nobody knows who they are. Mm-hmm. And then you get famous enough to not have to wear drag. That's kind of what I feel he's doing in this. Or it's just like, if I don't have the gray spray that I have to have when I'm on TV, if I go to the supermarket, nobody knows that I'm Peter Vincent and I'm just some guy and I can't have that.
Yeah, I need to spray my hair and it looks like it's rock hard.
Yeah. Yeah, because we all know that, like, the hairspray in the 80s was not like, oh, you could brush through this. It's like, no, you're going to wear it for 5 years.
Also, okay, I'm sorry. I'm born in 97. I apologize. I'm going to ask a dumb question for people in the room and people tuning in, so I apologize, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Did they have, like, the same type of color hairspray back then as well, or are they literally using spray paint?
So it is like, it's my understanding is that it is a combination of hairspray and powder.
Got it.
But it was not like the access of like spray hair was not what it is now.
Got it. Okay.
A lot of times it did just like stain what you had going on because it was so overpowered, the way that there are some hair brands that are essentially like fabric paint. It's kind of like
fabric paint. And
also, like, I think people forget in, like, the 80s and 90s, just anything alternative was also just really hard to find outside of Halloween in general. So, like, you could get these kind of hairsprays, but they just were not of the quality that they are now. Like, hairspray science just wasn't up to snuff yet.
It was not. So, okay, good. That's good to know. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I learned something new. Yay.
Happy to give you this information.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I'll write a paper on it. I'll give you a 12-page thesis on it. We've covered a lot of the movie, but it's also like, it's hard to cover everything about the movie.
Of course.
Because there's so much, and there's so much funness to it. Is there any final tidbits as we are wrapping up here that you're like,
ooh.
Oh, wait, I have one.
Okay, tell me.
I think you know, but I listened to a podcast about it. So I was like, I don't know if you knew this, but I was like, you haven't said it yet. So I was like,
what if I don't say it and you just tell me? And then even if I do know it, I can be really excited.
Surprised, you know. Okay. Do you know who is supposed to play Charlie before the actor?
Are you going to talk about Charlie Sheen?
Yeah. I was like, yeah, that would have been a completely
different It would have been a
movie.
Totally different movie.
You need an actor who looks like a cuck.
You need William Ragsdale. Yeah. He has just he has a soft boy face. He looks like somebody who lives next door.
Yeah.
And he needs to be somebody who can unbelievably be pathetic. This is, I guess, a compliment to Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
But especially 80s Charlie Sheen, in no universe would I ever believe that man is pathetic. He has cool bone structure.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be pathetic to me. I would immediately think that you're a cool guy.
Yeah, that's true. So that was my one.
I'm really glad that you brought it up though, because I would have forgotten to bring it up.
I was like, oh yeah, I did hear about that. I heard about that. So I was like,
we just alley-ooped this right now. We just scored the winning goal.
Fuck yeah.
It'd be basket, not a goal. That's the wrong sport.
And this isn't a sports podcast.
You know what? It's not. We don't have to know these things.
I mean, I do, but I, you know, I also know sports, but
I'm also just glad that I corrected myself in here so that people in the comments don't have to do it for me.
And that was brave, because they will. And they let you know.
They're going to start typing before I got to my second sentence.
I have one person who comments on every video. Is like, it's actually, and I'm like, hey, mm-hmm. I get it, mm-hmm. but I need you to go outside mm-hmm. and touch grass.
Breathe a single molecule of fresh oxygen.
Touch grass. Feel mm-hmm. it. Just... Mm-hmm. And then come back in and type.
Yes. Then you can come back
in. Because we need that comment for the algorithm.
Yes.
I appreciate you. I love you so much. So out of 10, how would you rate?
It's 10 out of 10.
Right now.
10 out of 10, baby.
What?
That's I know nice. That other people will not agree with me, but that is fine. That is my vote. It's your movie. That is my ranking.
It's your personal rating.
And yeah. that's all I have to say.
And that's literally it.
10 out of 10. I would change literally nothing about it, even the stuff that's a little whack.
Perfect. Amazing. Mm-hmm. That's literally what... People are always like, well, you know, if I were, I'm like, no, it is your personal rating. When you walk out of a movie, the first number you think of, that is the correct thing.
I do not have star ratings on Letterboxd for this reason. Because one, it's my personal relationship. And I'm also, I think that like there is no metric that we're all operating off of. We're all operating off of a different metric. So what might be a 5-star to me is a 1-star to somebody else. What mm-hmm. might be a 2-star to somebody else is a 5 to me. So who cares?
And I'm going to quote it every single time. In the words of the Grinch. One man's trash is another man's potpourri.
Yeah.
Okay?
It is.
And
that was poetry.
Every movie's good. Every movie's bad. Mm-hmm. Shut up and watch it. You know? Have fun.
Your least favorite movie is somebody's all-time favorite.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So for me, out of 10, I'm also a harsh ranker.
That's fair.
But I also operate on the IMDb. Anything over a 5 is, I would rewatch it. I give it a 7.
That's a solid rating. That's I will a accept a 7. That is a respectable like C student.
I don't give many things a 10. So 7's great.
I'll take a 7.
I love it. I loved it. It was freaking good. It was very different from the 2011, obviously.
Of course.
And there were some things where I was like, what is this ending? And wolves and bat rats and Jerry running around with the light being like, oh no. And I'm like, aren't you smart? And now you're done.
And Billy Cole turns into slime and sand.
Yeah, yeah.
Slime sand.
Slime sand. No, it would still just be sland?
Sland.
Sland, there we go. Mm-hmm. I was like, we can use sland. I was like, it would still just be slime. Is it? Yeah, it would be that. That's an S. Yeah, sland.
We should have like an ASMR video of us just like taking the remains of Billy Cole and just touching it and seeing what happens. That's what would get us into the algorithm is people would be like, whoa.
Whoa, we should have been doing that this whole time. Maybe people would actually watch my podcast. That's what it's missing. The ASMR slime tutorial. Say the keyword, slime tutorial. TikTok. For you page. FYB, if you will. Is this helping, YouTube? Is this helping? Please. But yeah. So I also ask this silly thing. I mean, I think I know the answer, but... Were you afraidy or not afraidy of Fright Night?
I was not afraidy of Fright Night. I can't. It's part of me. It's part of my DNA. That would be saying I'm scared of myself. That's a lie. Sometimes I am scared of myself. But not this aspect of me.
This aspect. You know what? I was not afraidy either.
Good.
But I am afraidy of myself. So it's, it makes sense. Yeah.
We did it.
Yeah, we did it. And I'm so proud of us.
I'm proud of us too.
And this is the point of the show where you plug your stuff to your camera right there. And plug where they can find you, things you got coming up, where they can read all your amazing things.
Sure.
Yeah.
So again, my name is BJ Colangelo. I'm on all forms of social media at BJ Colangelo. I also host a podcast called This Ends at Prom with my wife Harmony, where we talk about coming of age movies across all genres. And I am a frequent contributor to Fangoria Magazine. I'm the lead evening news editor at Slash Film, so I'm writing and interviewing all over there. And my wife and I also wrote a book about the slasher film Sleepaway Camp and its unintentional place as a formative queer horror text. And you can get that at Die Die Books.
Yay! That's awesome. And thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, of course. And thank you guys for being here. You're delights. Make sure to like, subscribe, all that jazz. Katie Afraidy on all social media platforms. We have a Patreon if you want to see the extended cuts. Those are fun, right? Right? Those are fun. Some episodes are on there that aren't on YouTube. So, ooh, fancy. Fancy. We do have some cool things in the works, so please stay tuned, especially if you're in the Los Angeles area. Something special for our 200th episode coming up. Kind of cool. Kind of cool. But yeah, I think that's it for me. But on that note, we like to end every episode with advice, good or bad, on the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually think about it right in the moment, right now. So here we go. My advice to you is, if a tall man comes up to you and his name is Jerry and he's hot and he's a vampire, take his hand. Take his hand.
And my advice is that if you're dating somebody and they have binoculars next to their window, stop dating them.
Yeah. They better be into birds. They better be into birds. They better.
They need to have a journal with all of the birds in your neighborhood. Otherwise, get out of there.
Hey, you gotta name five birds right now.
Name five birds.
Name five birds right now.
I have feral parrots outside my place.
Dude, they're so fucking
They're so scary.
They're so obnoxious.
They sound like screaming children. What is that about? This is how you know birds evolve from dinosaurs. Because goddamn.
They're terrifying. Birds are cool, but that's, you know what? That's another episode on the birds. So, and on that note, guys, we'll see you next time. Stay afraidy.
We would like to give a huge thanks to a few of our sponsors. Film Craft Studio Gear, where you can get any gear you're looking for all production needs. Go to filmcraftla.com or you can find them at filmcraftla on Instagram. And of course, a big shout out to Fangoria. Want a copy of a Fangoria magazine? Use code KatieAfraidy25 for 25% off. KatieAfraidy25 for 25% off.
This could be the night of your life. Fright Night, coming to your neighborhood this summer.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.